Episode 14 of the Torque Factor podcast is here, and I'm your host, Scott Brown. This is a place where we discuss all things moving the automotive service industry forward, focusing on expanding knowledge and awareness around tools, equipment, education, and industry trends. This episode's featured guest is with Mr. David Ehler, who is the manager of active safety testing at the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety. Mr. Ehler has worked at IIHS since 2004 and has been closely involved with all of its testing programs. Most recently, he has helped develop the evaluation program for front crash prevention systems. His areas of research include rear impact, low-speed damageability, and crash avoidance technology. Mr. Ehler received a bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering from the University of Virginia. Mr. Ehler and I recently connected to discuss advanced driver assistance systems, ADAS feature testing, and when we're likely to see Level 5 autonomous vehicles on the road. This episode is sponsored in part by LaunchTech USA is a leading diagnostic tool manufacturer, continually improving their diagnostic scan tool lineup by keeping pace with OEM diagnostic requirements. Focusing on accuracy, reliability, and usability, LaunchTech Diagnostic Tools provides today's service technicians with the information they need to support diagnostic proficiency. From its FCA-approved X431 ProLine scan tool and high-level electrical diagnostic tools like the 4-channel Box 2 oscilloscope, and all the way to their intelligent ADAS solutions, LaunchTech is committed to providing service professionals with diagnostic efficiency and profitability. VehicleServicePros.com is a trusted online resource for vehicle service and repair information, fleet maintenance management, and the latest products for servicing America's fleet of vehicles. It's the official website of Professional Tool and Equipment News, Fleet Maintenance, and Professional Distributor Magazines. VehicleServicePros.com is on the pulse of the industry, sharing new technology, the latest product information, and market trends to keep our readers in the know-how. All right, that brings us to our recall segment. First up is 20-Victor-766, potentially affecting 7,700 2020 Subaru Legacy and Outback vehicles. These vehicles are equipped with the high-grade and mid-grade multimedia navigation. The August 2020 over-the-air software update may have timed out without completing the installation. This resulted in corrupting the data and causing the rear-view display to shut off intermittently. Subaru will notify owners and dealers will reprogram the software and, if necessary, replace the cockpit control module free of charge. The recall is expected to begin January 22, 2021. The next recall we have is from American Honda Motor Company, recall number 20-Victor-768, potentially affecting just under 269,000 vehicles. The vehicles involved are certain 2002 to 2006 CRVs. What's happening here is that moisture may enter the driver's side power window master switch, causing the switch to fail or melt. If the switch fails, it could overheat and smoke, increasing the risk of fire. Honda will notify owners and dealers will replace the power window master switch and inspect the wiring harness for damage, replacing it if necessary, free of charge. The recall is expected to begin on January 18, 2021. Up next is a case study posted to Diagnostic Network from Bernie Thompson at Automotive Test Solutions. Bernie's case study is a video that covers the diagnostics he used to uncover the cause of a persistent DTC P0399 and an extended crank condition on a 2018 Chrysler 300 with the infamous 3.6-liter ERB engine. Bernie walks you through the diagnostic process and how he used the oscilloscope to identify a mechanical problem with the crankshaft reluctor. A link to the entire post can be found within the show notes, and I encourage you to check it out. And that brings us to our featured guest, Mr. David Ehler, manager of active safety system testing at the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety. So let's have a listen. Well, today, folks, I'm fortunate to have an expert from the IIHS, which is the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, and you probably know who they are. You've seen all the crash tests that get done and published showing how cars fare in certain crash tests. Well, these are the folks that do this type of testing. And in fact, they were founded in 1959. And as I was prepping for this call, I saw that on YouTube, they have a video that they did to commemorate their 50th. So this was back in 2009. And they took a 1959 Chevrolet Bel Air and they crashed it into a 2009 Chevrolet. And just to illustrate the drastic change in safety technology. And I encourage you to go check it out because it's really, really eye-opening. Safety systems on these cars are doing a lot. So today we have David Ehler, who is the manager of active safety testing at IIHS. So welcome to the call, David.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. And I look forward to our conversation about just some of the trends in technology and vehicles these days.
Sure. So the reason I reached out to IIHS and is to get a little more data because I participate in a number of groups out there. And one of the work groups is through the Auto Care Association. And last year we had a presentation by one of your colleagues, Sean O'Malley, and he provided us some really good insight on some different things that are happening. One about the research center and then two about what ADAS is what impact ADAS is having in the marketplace. So tell me just a little bit about the research center there in Virginia.
Yeah, so I work at our vehicle research center, which is in Rutgersville, Virginia. It's central Virginia, about 2 hours south of Washington, D.C. And we have a full crash lab where we can do crash tests. Like the tests you talked about, the 59 Bel Air into the 09 Malibu. We also have two test tracks. We have a 5-acre covered test track that allows us to test no matter the weather conditions. And then we have a typical outdoor test track. So we do crash testing. We also do what we call crash avoidance testing to look at some of the new technologies that will automatically apply the brakes or warn the driver. And so we're constantly, you know, conducting testing, looking at new technology, trying to promote vehicle systems that make vehicles safer. Again, both before a crash and then in the event that you're actually in a crash.
So how involved are you with the ADAS stuff? Is that in your wheelhouse?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you mentioned, my title is Manager of Active Safety. And what that means is I manage a team of folks that research the new technology that tries to prevent you from being in a crash. We then develop tests to evaluate these systems and, you know, promote them to the consumers when they're buying cars. And so we are, you know, out on our test track every day, you know, using different equipment and fake targets to evaluate how well these systems work.
Great. So if we look at the SAE, the SAE is basically defined the stages on the road to autonomy. So they have six levels, starting out at level zero and ending at level five. What do you see as far as the transition to the level five? When do you think we might see something in production in the marketplace?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to say. I think that's a long way off. You know, I think several years ago, there was a lot of talk, a lot of media hyping, you know, in 5 years, we'll see automated cars. I think that was sort of the peak of the discussion. And I think we've now started to realize that it's a lot more challenging than we thought. And so level five being, you know, full autonomy where the car is driving you from point A to B is extremely challenging. And so I think we're just in the beginning stages of trying to get there. And it's going to take baby steps. And I think, you know, we're going to have human driven cars for decades to come for sure.
Yeah. And I totally agree with that. If you think about what we're asking or what they're asking a car to do, the human is absolutely incredible. You know, we can make decisions based off of our experiences, you know, and that's what a lot of this, the AI, right, is trying to learn how to recognize events or objects or what have you, and then issue certain commands into the vehicle. And a human is just absolutely remarkable as far as how they can respond or what have you. But there are times when a human is in a deficient state, right, where they're distracted or not paying attention. So yeah, this stuff is, it's absolutely incredible. And this is what, you know, the reason I have you on the call is to talk about what impact it's having, because these sensors and systems or what have you, they're being introduced into the vehicle as sort of a test, right? As we migrate and mature these systems and eventually getting to level 5, we're now having to deal with these systems. So what can you tell me? You know, you have another group that works with in conjunction with IIHS called HLDI, which is a Highway Loss Data Institute. And I don't know if you have any data for me, but if we look at what impact is the driver assistance or these active safety systems having on, say, a reduction in collisions and injuries?
Yeah, great question. You know, like you said, a lot of these current systems, you know, are sort of the initial steps towards partially automated or fully automated systems. And some of these systems like forward collision warning or forward collision warning with auto brake, lane departure, you go on and on. We are seeing significant benefits. And as you mentioned, our sister organization, the Highway Loss Data Institute, they're able to get a lot of information from our insurance sponsors. And for several years now, they've been looking at the effectiveness of these systems by comparing optional systems. So they can look at the same make and model with and without a technology. And so for many of these systems, we're seeing significant reductions. For instance, you know, we're seeing 27% reductions in front to rear crashes for systems that warn the driver. Now, when you add forward collision warning with automatic braking, so a system that will warn the driver, and if the driver doesn't respond, it will apply the brakes, we're seeing about a 50% reduction in front to rear crashes. I mean, that's a huge number. I mean, we've all, you know, driven down the interstate, seen a front to rear collision where potentially the driver was, you know, not paying attention, maybe, you know, playing with their radio or their phone. And so those are huge reductions. Another, you know, big area that we've seen is rear automatic braking. And so, you know, we've seen for years the ultrasonic, the small, you know, ultrasonic sensors on the back of the car that beep at the driver when they're getting closer. Well, now manufacturers are automatically applying the brake, and we're seeing almost an 80% reduction for vehicles equipped with rear automatic braking. And that's a common crash scenario in the parking lot of the grocery store where you back into another car or a pole. You know, as I said at the beginning, these technologies are just initial steps, but we're seeing that they're highly effective in helping the driver avoid crashes.
Yeah, and that is interesting. It's really kind of a hard stat to come up with too, because I started thinking about this. Well, how do you report the near misses of that don't result in a collision, right? And I know that I've been driving a level 0 vehicle, you know, going back probably 6 or 7 years. And I know that there were a couple of occasions where the beeping alert had me like focus my attention, and I avoided, you know, bumping into somebody. So, you know, I know you have to do comparative, but man, there's got to be a big pool of people out there that are missing events like that just due to these safety systems.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's very hard to study, you know, and because of our insurance sponsors and the amount of data that we get, you know, we're able to compare as best we can, apples to apples, you know, a Toyota Camry with the system as optional versus a Camry without it. And so our whole process is once we see that technology in the real world is working, we then develop a test to evaluate it and promote it. And what you see now is these manufacturers, you know, they want to do well in our tests. And so these features become more prevalent. They become standard. you know, and we even worked with the federal government and most of the vehicle manufacturers to come up with a voluntary commitment that they would make this standard, you know, by next year. So that's a huge step for a technology that's, you know, reducing front to rear crashes by 50%.
Yeah, that is awesome. All right. So, you know, I want to move into the service and repair segment because that's what I'm involved with. And that's what my listeners are engaged with, because these technologies are going to be part of our lives. And for some, they're already there because some of these guys do work for collision centers. And so they're seeing vehicles that, you know, they're getting in a collision, and there are service impact or there are service requirements around these systems, you know, when you put that vehicle back into service so that it's ready to deliver the same level of capabilities it was originally designed for. Are you monitoring what impact service and repair is having on the, you know, or what the ADAS systems are having an impact on the service and repair segment?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a couple pieces of that. You know, obviously we want to reduce the crashes in general, but we also would like to reduce the cost of these. And a lot of these systems have very expensive components on the edges of vehicle, expensive radars, ultrasonic sensors. And so when you are in a low speed crash, it's typical that your body shops are used to seeing, you know, low speed crash can result in significant amount of damage from replacing these parts. But on top of that, you know, we've got a lot of these sensors that require calibrations. And in many cases, manufacturers, you know, indicate that the calibration needs to be done at a, you know, a certified dealer. Which is challenging and can be costly. And so we are monitoring things like calibration procedures and can they be done at any body shop. We're also looking at windshield replacements because often you have cameras located, you know, behind the windshield. So a simple windshield replacement, which could have been done, you know, at your work parking lot for a few hundred dollars, now requires a calibration. At a dealer, it's much more expensive. So we would like to see a lot of this streamlined, you know, so that calibrations can be conducted in a similar fashion for all the manufacturers with readily available equipment, and in a timely fashion. It doesn't require huge vehicle bays, you know, or significant driving time. Because again, at the end of the day, that drives up the cost and the challenge of these repairs.
Yeah. And it is very challenging, especially when you look at one manufacturer that has, or you compare one manufacturer against another that has a similar system. So maybe a lane keeping system, and one OEM requires specific targets, you know, placed in space around the vehicle to do the procedure. And then another manufacturer has a kind of a routine basically that puts it into a dynamic learn mode. And so the cost differential there just for the service operation is huge. And that I think is a big challenge. You know, and I think that the manufacturers can do better. I know that when Sean gave us a presentation with the AutoCare, you know, last year, I made a few notes, and I have one here that he had indicated when they did a survey of the dealerships out there, and they were talking about the windshields. And they showed in 2019, they had 76% of the time the customer has the wrong windshield installed when it shows up for calibration, which is, man, that is huge. And so there's got to be a big awareness pushed out there for the service and repair market so that they are paying attention to this stuff so they don't get the wrong components installed in these vehicles.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've seen some stories of, you know, particular makes or a particular model that has 21 different windshields based on the, you know, cutouts for camera and defrost elements and, you know, you name it. And as you mentioned, I mean, there's lots of different, you know, manufacturers that their calibration procedure, you know, requires a different target with dots compared to one that has circles or one that requires, driving time, or I've seen, you know, horror stories from body shops that have a typical repair bay, and the calibration for a blind spot sensor requires more space than their shop has. And so, it really would be great for the industry, for consumers, if a lot of this was just streamlined and there were similar calibration procedures. And it's definitely something that we're monitoring. And as we see more of these systems on vehicles, it's going to become increasingly more important.
Great. So you mentioned earlier about you develop tests around measuring or putting a number on the performance of these systems. So I'm wondering if you can perhaps give our audience some insight on how you're developing these tests. Because we as service and repair technicians, maybe we do a service on a car. Maybe there's something in the service information that says how to validate the lane departure system. And some manufacturers do give you some illustration on that. They tell you, go ahead and, drift over to the line and make sure it's giving you a warning and all that good stuff. But do you have maybe some best practices on recommendations around how to validate some of these safety systems?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's challenging. Our tests are with sort of new vehicles that we've recently purchased. We drive them at, targets that represent real cars. It's like giant inflatable cars that visually look like a car and have the same radar profile as a car, and we want to see if the car's going to stop like it would in the real world. And so, that's not something that a body shop, could set up. And so I think it's challenging to sort of verify that. We have seen situations for manufacturers where the windshield camera was installed improperly. In a short drive, you can tell that because it doesn't sort of let you get close to one lane line, but it allows you to cross over the other lane line before it starts to warn. It's challenging, but again, I think manufacturers could potentially have some diagnostic tools to check this. I also think that as we move forward, we're seeing a lot more sensor redundancy. So whether that's a camera and a radar or, multiple cameras. And so I think there's some potential there for manufacturers to sort of have some checks and balances between the sensors. So if the radar and the camera, don't agree on the position of the car or features around the car, it should pop up sort of a warning to the consumer that says, hey, these systems are confused. You need to take this in to have it looked at. And it could be a simple alignment procedure to make sure they're pointed in the right direction.
Yeah, that is interesting. You mentioned that you're creating these cars, or you have a car that basically mimics a real automobile, but it's, it's inflatable or what have you. And so if the car does run into it, of course, it's going to cause no or minimal damage. But you said same radar profile. So how do you, roughly, how do you achieve the same radar profile on an inflatable unit? Is there special material? Is it painted with something special to give that radar signature?
Yeah, that's a great question. Inside the target, there's areas that have radar reflecting material that can simulate, where you get strong radar profiles from other cars, like rear axles. There's even radar absorbing elements sort of at the bottom, because, radar will go underneath a real car. There's a lot of work by organizations like ours, as well as suppliers of these systems like Continental and Delphi, to make the targets as realistic as possible. Oddly enough, often these targets end up costing more than a small to mid-sized car, because like you said, they have to be impactable and realistic. But a lot of work goes into that. Funny story. I had a gentleman, a doctor, wrote me one time and said he was trying to test his system in his driveway on this new BMW X5. He couldn't get it to work. I wrote him. I said, hey, I don't advise that. There's a lot of detail that goes into this. Just trust that when you need it, it hopefully will work. Well, a few weeks later, he emailed me. He was very excited because he had gotten the system to work. Not only did he have a bed sheet with a car outline on it, but he had added baking sheets to the back of it, and it worked. I don't recommend that. I think it's a terrible idea. But it's along those lines that the cameras visually need to see, you know, what looks like a car, but they also need to have radar return. And cars are getting more and more intelligent in being able to discern the difference between a vehicle, a bicycle, a pedestrian, a trash can, a tin can. And so, you know, that's a challenge as the systems become more complex, you know, how we repair them and calibrate them.
Yeah, definitely. There is a lot of science going into these perception systems. Again, it's you know, they're going to be expected to perform like a human, you know, and we may recognize certain things that are happening, and now we've got to have a machine try to recognize that. And yeah, thank you for sharing that story. I was at first, when you were talking, I thought you were going to say the doctor called you back or responded with, "Oh yeah, I found out that the radar thing, and I had a collision because I turned it off or something." But that's great. Great. Thanks for sharing that. So, one of the other things, that I want to ask you about is, you know, what new technologies are coming into the pipeline? I know that I watched a live webcast last year. I think it was around June or July of last year, and you were actually on this webcast. And at the end, you were talking about some new technology around headlights. What can you tell us about that, and anything else that you can maybe add to this conversation?
Yeah. So, you know, I think a lot of times people forget that their headlights are a safety feature. Obviously, without them, you can't drive at night. And you know, about 50% of fatalities occur at night, so it's really important to have adequate lighting. And so we have a test that looks at how well the vehicle illuminates the road. You know, we also want to make sure it doesn't produce too much glare for oncoming cars. A lot of that is down to how well the headlights are aimed, which, you know, I'm sure shops, either through inspections or repairs, that's a big deal. But we do see some technology that's available in Europe, you know, called adaptive driving beams. And this uses the same camera technology in the windshield to see the lane lines, but it's able to detect where there are cars around the vehicle. And basically, it can turn off different portions of light around the vehicles. And so, for instance, you'll have high beams everywhere except where there's an oncoming car. And so you'll have the maximum amount of visibility without glaring the oncoming car. And so we think this technology has huge potential. Unfortunately, right now, the way that federal regulations are written, it's not allowed in the U.S. And so there's a lot of work by the manufacturers, by other organizations, to try to convince the federal government to make this technology legal so that manufacturers can bring it into the market.
Yeah. And on the windshield or on the headlights, it's pretty interesting because I did a bunch of studying on this, and I found, you know, there's other reasons for having this adaptable. So you look at the signs, right? A lot of the signs have a high reflectivity, but you don't need, a camera doesn't need ultra high, you know, because that puts glare sometimes on that, that target themselves. So that's also another reason, but hopefully the feds will see the importance of this, these advances, because I'm a driver like everybody else. And I've been on the freeway and I've got cars behind me that their high beams are on, or their lights are just glaring and making it difficult for me as the driver to navigate. And so that's kind of frustrating, but I'm happy to see that. Do you see any other technologies in the pipeline out there that are worth a mention?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, going back full circle to what we talked about at the beginning, you know, a lot of these technologies are the basis for more advanced. And so we're starting to see, you know, what we call level two in terms of SAE's hierarchy. But, you know, these are systems that not only have adaptive cruise control to maintain the distance behind a vehicle in front of you, but also have lane centering or lane keeping that use the camera to keep you in your lane. Again, these systems now still require the driver to be involved at all times, but they're really there, you know, to provide support, maintain, you know, safe following distances, to keep you in the lane. And so, you know, we're starting to see more of these technologies. You know, we still want to do some studies to see how effective they are in the real world. But again, that's sort of where the technology is headed, using some of these existing features to expand on their capability.
Yeah, and I, as this technology comes into play, I think that there's going to be a big need probably for driver education, because the way these systems behave and respond, and then we have to think about like the fallback, right? So that customer, they may grow complacent, right? As the system is now taking, you know, providing latitudinal and longitudinal control over the car. But when something starts to go wrong or it just shuts off, that customer or that driver needs to be able to take right over. So are you studying, I would assume that your group probably is studying this as well. Any input on that?
Yeah, so we think, we really want to focus some attention on driver monitoring. And that can be for, like you said, level zero systems, because we know it's easy for drivers to get distracted. And more and more vehicles now are monitoring the driver. And you're absolutely right. As the vehicle starts to do more things for the driver, it's possible that they could get more complacent. And so it's even more important to keep them engaged if an emergency happens or if the system can't handle a scenario. And so, you know, we're starting to look at these driver monitoring systems to see how effective they are at keeping the driver engaged, keeping their hands on the wheel. You know, a lot of systems, you know, if they sense your hands are not on the wheel, they'll warn you. Another example is General Motors Super Cruise, you know, is looking at the driver's head position to try to make sure that you're not looking to the side or down, that you're actually looking at the forward roadway. And so we think there's a lot of potential in these driver monitoring systems to keep the driver engaged in the task of driving. Because as we mentioned, we're not going to have full autonomy for decades. And so it's really important right now that the driver always remain engaged in the task of driving.
Yeah, absolutely. And if they read their owner's manual, it says right in there that you are responsible for safe operation of this vehicle at all times. So owners need to read the manual. So, well, great. I really appreciate your time today, David, and sharing your insight and sharing some of the expertise that the folks at IIHS are doing for the marketplace. And hopefully we can get you back, or maybe one of your colleagues back on a call here in the future as we progress, because this is a very rich topic, and it's going to continue to evolve and introduce new challenges into the service marketplace. So thank you, David.
Absolutely. It was my pleasure, and I look forward to some future conversations.
That brings us to the industry events roundup. P10 Motor Age, ABRN, and VehicleServicePros.com will be presenting the Vehicle Repair Virtual Training Summit starting Wednesday, January 20th, 2021, offering on-demand access to 40-plus training courses for 45 days at one low price. Visit VehicleServicePros.com/Virtual Training Summit to register today. The Vision High Tech Training and Expo has announced its 2021 event will transition from an in-person event to a virtual event. The six-day training event will span across 2 weeks, consuming 3 days each week. The event will start on Tuesday, March 2nd, and will conclude on Thursday, March 11th. Visit visionkc.com for more information.
Hello, Newman.
And this bit of feedback was provided by Bob M. out of Kennett Square, Pennsylvania, about Episode 7 with Michael Invardsen. Hi, Scott. I found it very interesting, your interview with Michael, particularly the discussion of what I refer to as HVAC temperature testing. I am a contract trainer, and one of my major clients is Max, the Mobile Air Conditioning Society. A number of years back, a Max trainer, Larry Turay, took the time and effort to comprehensively look at temperature testing as an HVAC diagnostic tool. Larry took the pain to measure a myriad of systems with different problems and then catalog them to produce a very comprehensive class on the topic. The class was delivered at several of the MAX conventions back around 2015 and is still available as a standalone class from MAX. MAX also developed a DVD for the class, and it's still available from AVI under title LBT-272. Well, we thank you, Bob, for your feedback. And recently, MAX has retitled their association as the Mobile Air Climate Systems Association. And for your listeners, if you'd like to submit your feedback, please drop us a note in our mailbag, podcast@vehicleservicepros.com. And we'd love to get your feedback. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions on topics or guests, please drop us a note in our mailbag, podcast@vehicleservicepros.com. Now that brings us to the end of the show, and we hope we were able to bring you some quality content. And we thank you for joining us.